In today's gospel, Jesus goes throughout Galilee, preaching the good news and healing those who are sick. The Lord be with you.
And with your spirit.
A reading from the Holy Gospel according to Mark.
Glory to you, O Lord.
On leaving the synagogue, Jesus entered the house of Simon and Andrew with James and John. Simon's mother-in-law lay sick with a fever. They immediately told him about her. He approached, grasped her hand, and helped her up. Then the fever left her, and she waited on them. When it was evening after sunset, they brought to him all who were ill or possessed by demons. The whole town was gathered at the door. He cured many who were sick with various diseases, and he drove out many demons, not permitting them to speak because they knew him. Rising very early before dawn, he left and went off to a deserted place where he prayed. Simon and those who were with him pursued him, and on finding him said, "Everyone is looking for you." He told them, "Let us go on to the nearby villages, that I may preach there also. For this purpose have I come." So he went into their synagogues, preaching and driving out demons throughout the whole of Galilee. The Gospel of the Lord.
Praise to you, Lord Jesus Christ.
In the year 1564, Queen Elizabeth I of England paid a visit one day to Oxford University. As queen, she would go to various places in the country making, you know, royal visits, and to go to the universities was one of the things she did. Oxford was, of course, a great center of learning. And the custom was that when the queen visited a university like that, the top student at the university would greet her, would welcome her in the name of the whole university. At that time, the leading student at Oxford was a young 20-year-old man named Edward Campion. So he greeted her. Later on during the day, in front of her there was a debate. This was also part of the custom, that they'd have a debate over disputed questions. Edward Campion took part in that debate. And Queen Elizabeth was so impressed by him that she called him up to her at one point and said, "Young man, I myself will see to your future." Now, this would mean that his future was guaranteed. Probably when he finished his studies, she'd have a role for him in government. This was like your ship coming in hundredfold, right? But Edward Campion had something else on his heart. He was a Catholic. This was the time in England when the Catholic Church had been suppressed by Henry VIII and by Elizabeth, his daughter. If you were a Catholic, you couldn't worship in public. In fact, if you were a Catholic and you didn't worship according to the Protestant form of worship, you could be fined and even imprisoned. Priests could not function at all publicly. If they were caught functioning, they faced very strict, fierce punishments. But Edward Campion had this conviction that Henry VIII had made a great mistake when he separated the church in England from the Pope. So he determined that he wasn't going to stay in England. He went to the continent, finished his studies over there in Belgium and France. Brilliant, brilliant student. He heard when he was there about this new religious community that was forming called the Jesuits. He decided he would join that community. He did, was ordained a priest. Because he was so brilliant, he began teaching in some of the universities in Europe to great success. But Edward Campion had something else on his heart. He felt called to go back to England, to go back there and preach the gospel, preach the truth as he understood it. So at one point, he was smuggled back into England, because remember now, priests were unable to function, smuggled back into England, and for 9 months, he ministered in secret. In those days, what would happen is that Catholic families would welcome a priest in secret. Word would get around, a priest was in their home, people would come, they would have mass there in the home, he'd hear confessions. Many of those homes even had what they called priest holes, secret rooms, secret places where priests could hide so they wouldn't be discovered. So Edward Campion did this for 9 months. And then he was betrayed by an informer and caught and arrested. He was marched through the streets of London with a big sign around his neck that said, "Edward Campion, traitor." Put into the Tower of London for many months. Every once in a while, they'd bring him out and force him into a debate in the hopes that he would lose the debate and see the error of his ways and renounce his Catholicism. He wouldn't do it. So finally, one day, they took him out of the Tower of London, brought him to the gallows, and they hanged him. And then they drew and quartered him. You know what that was, being drawn and quartered? It means that they would hang you, and then before you were dead, they'd take you down. If you were a man, they'd disembowel you. And then they would tie your hands to a horse and your feet to a horse and send the horses off in different directions. Edward Campion was martyred that way. Ultimately named a saint, not so well known in this country, but very much revered in Europe. But here's the question. Why would he go back to England? He was successful over there in Europe, safe. Why would he go back to England, facing what he knew might happen to him? Well, I think he was like St. Paul in the second reading today. St. Paul there says he's compelled to preach the gospel. He's compelled by the Spirit. The Spirit is working in him in a way that he just can't resist, compelled to preach the gospel. I think that's what Edward Campion felt. He had to go back to England to preach the truth. He had to do it. He was compelled to do it. And of course, we see the same thing, Christ himself giving us that example in the gospel, don't we? Which he says, "I've got to go out to all the villages in Galilee, all the villages. I can't stay here. I've got to go out to all the villages to preach the good news." Compelled to preach the good news. But here's the point for you and me. Do you feel compelled to preach Christ with your life? See, when you're baptized, when I was baptized, on that day we received the gift of the life of God. And that gift became our responsibility to share. On that day we were called to become evangelizers. We're supposed to be those who spread the gospel, spread the truth. That's not something that belongs just to priests to do or bishops. Every baptized Christian is supposed to present Christ to the world. Every day, people come in and out of your presence. Family members, people at work, people at school, they come in and out of your presence. The question is, when they come out of your presence, are they closer to Christ? By what you've said, what you've done, the example you give, have you evangelized them? Now, that evangelization might take the form sometimes of what you teach them, what you have to share with them verbally. Just a couple of examples of that. Controversial examples, but nonetheless, the truth. Suppose you're in a group of people one day, and the subject of abortion comes up. Always controversial, right? Would you feel compelled to say to those people kindly, gently, charitably, would you feel compelled to say, you know, I believe that from the moment the egg is fertilized by a sperm in a woman's body, that you have the beginning of a human person there. And from that moment on, that human person will develop and grow from within itself. The woman's body is the environment, but that grows within itself. And every step along the way, from that first day until 9 months later, you've got a human person growing there. That's what I believe. Would you say that to people? Would you say that to them? It's not a popular thing to be said, but we feel compelled to say that. The truth. Or again, another example. This past week, you might have seen, like maybe two weeks ago now, there was a man put to death by the state of Georgia. He was a convicted murderer, put to death by a very controversial means. He actually took him 14 minutes to die. Not a lot of fun for him, I'm sure. But here's the point. Would you, dealing with that kind of a question, understand and feel compelled to say to people, we don't believe in capital punishment anymore? At one time, the church taught that if you had to protect society and you couldn't do it in any other way than to put someone to death, then you could do that because you had to protect society. But that's no longer the case. Pope after pope after pope in the last 25, 30 years have taught that we can safeguard society by life imprisonment with no parole. You can safeguard society that way. And when you can safeguard society that way, you should not kill. You should not kill. Even a convicted criminal remains a human being. Doesn't lose their human dignity before God. They may be terrible people, society has to be protected from, but when you don't have to kill, you don't kill. What do we do when we kill? We simply state that killing is our right. When we kill, when we don't have to, aren't we saying that killing is okay to solve your problems at times? See, there are times we have to evangelize. Even when we open ourselves up to criticism, or people don't agree with us, or they laugh at us, or they whatever. That's what it means to be compelled by the Spirit of God. Other times when people come into your presence and out of your presence, it's by your example, not so much what you say, it's what you do. Your charity, your mercy, your forgiveness, your generosity. They see that. They're evangelized by you trying to live out what it means to be a disciple of Christ. But make no mistake, we are all compelled to evangelize. Let me conclude with one final little story that probably illustrates the same sort of thing. Back in 1950, under St. Peter's Basilica in Rome, by accident, the tomb of St. Peter was discovered. Now, on the site of St. Peter's Basilica, there was an original church built way back in the 3rd century by the Emperor Constantine. It was built on, tradition tells us, on an old ancient Roman cemetery where it was believed St. Peter had been buried. That original church had been destroyed. And so in the Middle Ages, Under Michelangelo, St. Peter's Basilica was built over that same site. And they were doing some work one day under the cathedral, the foundations and so forth, and they discovered this ancient cemetery. And one of the things they discovered was a tomb. And over the tomb were written these words, Petrus Eni. Peter lies here. Peter lies here. And they found some bones inside. They had the bones tested for DNA and by carbon testing. They proved to be the bones of a man who lived in the first century. And they were wrapped in purple cloth. Purple was the color of the ancient Romans for kings and royal people and so forth. The church adopted that color for bishops and priests, bishops and for the Pope. And all around that tomb were written these little inscriptions, pray for me, pray for me, pray for me. So as clearly as we possibly can know, that is actually the tomb of St. Peter. I remember doing a tour of what they call the Scavi, the excavations under St. Peter's. When I came to that spot, I could see that tomb. I was really spiritually moved, being the presence of the remains of St. Peter himself. But here's the point. Why did St. Peter go to Rome? The Christians in Rome were being persecuted by Nero. Awful persecution. Why would he leave relative safety where he was and go to Rome to face persecution with the other Christians there? He's compelled by the Spirit of God, compelled to bring the good news, the truth, even at the danger of his own life. St. Peter, St. Paul, St. Edward Campion, you and me, compelled to evangelize, to bring the truth of Christ to the world. Do you understand that? You're compelled. You are compelled. May God bless you.